This KPCT podcast, sponsored by Clicker Expo. Take your training skills to the next level. The nation's top animal trainers work with you at Clicker Expo. For locations and dates of the next conference, visit www.clickerexpo.com or call 800-472-5425. That's 800-472-5425.
This is a selection from Reaching the Animal Mind by Karen Pryor, read by the author, from Chapter 6, Attachments. Animal Friends. We are a little presumptuous about individual friendships and preferences amongst our domestic animals. We assume that because we like each and every animal, they must like each other. A common complaint of pet owners is that they added a new cat or dog to the household, and friction ensued. These two dogs hate each other. This young cat is pouncing on the old tired cat with ever-increasing glee. What can the behaviorist or trainer do to stop that? While I sympathize with the issue, I sometimes sympathize more with the pets. Who asked them if they like this new individual? Perhaps they were never meant to be friends. Of course, our domestic animals can indeed form intense attachments not just with us, as we perennially hope and assume, but with other animals, both within and across species. Animals like people have preferences for other individuals that can only partly be explained by reinforcement, and for which we have no particular evolutionary explanation either. In about 1985, I acquired my first border terrier named Skookum, a Northwest Indian word meaning sturdy and useful but not beautiful. When Skookum was just a puppy, he spent an afternoon playing with a half-grown German shepherd named Orca. A few months later, Orca and her owner visited my house, and Skookum and Orca played again. That was it, two encounters. About 3 years later, I took Skookum to a lecture by a visiting dog trainer. The room was jammed with people and dogs. Skookum, normally respectably behaved on public and on leash, suddenly went berserk, pulling on his leash, whining, jumping up and down, trying desperately to get me to take him to something across the room. "Look, it's Orca! Orca's here!" Indeed, it was Orca. Orca was now a big, grown-up search and rescue shepherd, looking very different from herself when younger. Alas, she had zero time for Skookum now. But Skookum, in spite of their minimal contact, would never forget her. Back in Hawaii, one of my Welsh pony broodmares, Lyric, had several foals for me. Lyric's first was a dark, dappled bay filly I named Sonnet. When Sonnet was 3 years old, I sent her to California to show and sell. She was a sturdy, cobby Welsh with a pretty face and a fine big trot, the ideal pony, I thought. I did not know that the fashion in California was for longer necks and more hock action. No one bought her. I left her there with other breeders for a year or so and then brought her back to Hawaii to join my broodmare band again. When Sonnet was unloaded from the truck, her mother, Lyric, two fields away, set up a tremendous uproar of screams and whinnying. Lyric had seen her second and third offspring come and go with aplomb. Her handsome son, Telstar, was probably in plain sight, another two fields over. Apparently, however, Lyric was strongly attached to this daughter. The two were reunited with great joy and nickering from Lyric, and considerably less emotion on Sonnet's part, I thought. Emotional attachments can happen between captive animals in zoos and oceanariums, but are not always apparent until one of the animals is gone. At Disney's Animal Kingdom, the daily exercise of separating the gorilla family paid off when two adolescent males, who in the wild would soon be wanting to leave their natal band anyway, were sent to another zoo to join a different gorilla family. Separation went smoothly, as did the crating and shipping. At least one of the youngsters reportedly played clicker games with his keeper through the crate walls to pass the time on the long airplane trip. The young males seemed to be delighted with their new family and fit right in. But back at Animal Kingdom, the mother of one of them cried for 4 days. We can accept that biologically determined ties exist in animals. We don't feel surprised when a cow bellows for her weaned calf for a day and a night. We tell ourselves, however, that this distress, whatever its nature, is short-lived, and therefore not at all like human grief. My feeling is that emotion is emotion, handed out to different species in differing amounts, perhaps, but causing the same internal sensations while it lasts. We assume that the animal feels no real pain because it soon forgets. Is that true? Skookum and Lyric did not forget. In Germany some years ago, a group of cattle, by some rich owner's whim, were allowed to simply exist and reproduce with no individuals being removed. Ethologists studied this herd for years, tracking the behavior and associations of individuals. One discovery was that the cows had particular friends, often, as with humans, dating back to their school years. When they were all calves together, female calves associated closely with some age mates and avoided others, and those friendships and antagonisms persisted throughout life. Isn't that a lot like people? Your best friend from the third grade may still be someone you enjoy, and the children you didn't feel close to then you might not have much in common with now either. The attachment between cow and calf might also not be always as transitory as we like to suppose. Another interesting finding from that cattle herd study concerned the dominant bull. In this undisturbed herd, the lead bull was not purchased from elsewhere, as bulls usually are, but arose to his position after growing up in the herd. The investigators noted that this bull always grazed around midday next to one particular cow. Why, his favorite in the harem? Not at all. Turns out he was in the habit of having lunch with his mother. Romance. While some mammals, birds, and fish form strong pair bonds that can last for years, even lifetimes, in most species, sexual behavior is not necessarily based on individual relationships. Whales and dolphins, for example, do not typically form male-female pair bonds. In some species, one or a few mature males live among the females and the young and do all the breeding. In other species, females and males normally live in separate groups, meeting up only in the breeding season. Sexual encounters in dolphins may involve a conflict between males and also aggression towards females. For example, ethologists in Australia have seen male bottlenose dolphins form temporary alliances of three or four males that actually abduct females by force from their all-female bands and steal them away for days at a time. Sea Life Park offered one sole exception to this general plan, Hoku and Kiko. Hoku and Kiko had a strong attachment. It was visible from the beginning. They swam holding hands. They ignored all other companions. They enjoyed a decorous and, on the whole, private love life. Only once, as far as I know, did they decide to copulate during a show. Hoku and Kiko performed four times daily in the Ocean Science Theater, circling inside the glass walls while taking a series of hurdles in unison, demonstrating their speed and agility both above and underwater. As they dove down deep after each hurdle and then turned upward for the next jump, three beautiful lines of tiny bubbles streamed from the tips of their pointed dorsal and pectoral fins, making long, waving lines around the glass tank, showing clearly how their sleek forms could shed turbulence better than any submarine. When they got their whistle and fish at the end, Hoku was downright chivalrous to Kiko. Normally, if a fish falls between two dolphins, the boldest animal grabs it at once. However, if a fish fell between Hoku and Kiko, he ceded it to her immediately, something absolutely unprecedented. The finale of the spotter section of the show was Hoku's jump through a hoop high above the water surface. As he made the jump, he got a whistle and a scattered jackpot of several fish, in which Kiko naturally shared. If he missed the hoop, as he sometimes did, earning no whistle and no fish, Kiko would burst into disagreeable squawking sounds, shake her open jaws up and down, and chase Hoku around the tank. The audience always roared at this wifely snit, which they could not only see but hear through built-in underwater microphones.
This KPCT podcast, sponsored by Clicker Expo. Take your training skills to the next level. The nation's top animal trainers work with you at Clicker Expo. For locations and dates of the next conference, visit www.clickerexpo.com or call 800-472-5425. That's 800-472-5425.